May it please the court. My name is Lauren Pasapia-Cerencion, and I represent Mrs. Saxton, the appellant in this matter. Before I begin, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well. When the yellow light comes on, that will begin your rebuttal time. You can continue, but you will be using it.
Okay. This is how strange the outcome of this case is. The law-abiding plaintiff is stopped at a red light. DiBiase crashes into Scully, or Scully crashes into DiBiase, and DiBiase's truck gets pushed into the plaintiff's vehicle. Debris from his truck also hits her car. The accident damages her car and injures her body. State Farm pays for the damage to plaintiff's vehicle on DiBiase's behalf. Some of her injuries are undisputed. And yet, the jury found no one at fault. And now Mrs. Saxton has to pay trial expenses to the defendant. The result lies in the face of justice. And here's where it went wrong. Appellee Louis DiBiase filed a motion in limine to admit vehicle photographs for the stated purpose of supporting his testimony that his vehicle, neither his vehicle nor debris from his vehicle, made any contact with the plaintiff's vehicle. The three photographs, however, located at A104, 105, and 106, and also at B4, 5, and 6 in the appendices, do not support that defense. They show quite the opposite. The photographs do show at least one dent, which was pointed out during plaintiff's cross-examination.
Were there other photos that were not introduced?
Yes, there were.
Of better quality?
The other photographs that were not introduced were taken on a separate day. I think they were taken by the insurance company. They were of a little bit better quality, but the court found that they were not admissible.
And why were they not admissible?
I think because they were taken at a different time. They weren't of the accident scene. They weren't taken that day. I have the page numbers of the other photographs are located at A30 through A55, if you'd like to see them. The three photographs that you do have in front of you, though, they show at least one dent, which was pointed out during plaintiff's cross-examination, and the other damage to the vehicle, like scratches and nicks in the windshield, damage to the bumper, the left fender, chrome grille, fog lamp, and an air deflector are not shown in those pictures. We know the accident caused the damage because State Farm paid approximately $2,300 to fix the vehicle. And insurance companies don't just pay for damage on behalf of their insured when their insured didn't cause the damage. And also, there's no evidence that the damage existed before the accident.
Well, wasn't the jury, one of the jury questions, do you find that the defendant's conduct proximately caused the accident?
The jury question was not split up. It asked if you found, I don't remember the exact wording, if you found the defendant negligent and that they proximately caused her injuries. And the reason why it was stated that way is because it seemed clear that there was negligence here by at least one of those parties. It was either Scully who entered the intersection wrongfully, or it was DiBiase who wrongfully turned left in front of her vehicle. But either way, somebody hit Plaintiff's vehicle, and it was noted by the police officer, and it was testified to by our client, Mrs. Saxton.
But the jury said no. And your argument on appeal is the jury said no to that question because they saw the photographs. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And the photographs could have been used either to answer the question of negligence or proximate cause. But because they were combined, we don't know what distinction the jury made.
Well, in Davis v. Mott, it expressly states that photographs cannot be used to establish proximate cause, essentially, because you can't look at damage and use that to decide whether there was injury.
Well, but in this case, did anyone argue that there was a disconnect between the damage and her personal injuries? Or that was the problem in Davis versus Mott. Small damage meant small injury. We said it was an improper argument without medical testimony. Here, while you dispute what the photographs depict, the defendant wanted to take the position, look at the photographs, you will conclude my truck didn't make contact. You will conclude my debris didn't cause any damage. Now, I understand State Farm paid, and that's all outside the record. But tell us where the trial judge violated the holding in Davis versus Mott, because the photographs could come in for an independent reason.
The holding in Davis v. Mott was violated because Davis requires four things, actually. One, the photographs have to be relevant to a material issue. Secondly, they have to be admissible under DRE 403, which requires that the prejudice cannot outweigh the probative value. Obviously, if the photographs are not relevant, there is no probative value. An explicit jury instruction has to be given, and counsel may not argue by implication or otherwise that little damages equals little or no injury, like you just stated. The photographs in this case are not relevant because while DiBiase states that I did not hit her vehicle, and here's the proof of it, it's actually not proof because there is damage to the vehicle. There is a dent in it.
Well,
and it does show.
Doesn't that also speak to the point that they're relevant because plaintiff's counsel actually used the photographs during the direct examination of DiBiase?
Plaintiff's counsel was essentially forced to use the photographs in an attempt to mitigate the damage. We had objected to the use of the photographs on the motion in limine with Judge Herlihy, and he had decided that they were admissible to establish. He said that they were admissible if the defendant DiBiase said that debris from his car did not hit Mrs. Saxon's vehicle. Then the case was transferred to Judge Slight, who again ruled on the issue at plaintiff's request, and he broadened that scope and said that they were admissible to show what the accident scene looked like, and several other reasons that were not necessarily relevant to this case. Nobody disputed what the accident scene looked like or what the cars looked like, the vehicles, I'm sorry.
But there was a dispute whether there was contact in any way, and the photograph at least showed the dent to prove contact, didn't it?
It does show the dent to prove contact, but that is plaintiff's prerogative to use that to impeach DiBiase during his testimony. That should not have been, the photograph should not have been admissible as a general admission into the case where they were able to be used during opening arguments as they were used here by DiBiase.
Well, where in Rule 401 or 402, whichever is the definition of relevancy, does it talk about prerogative being a factor in terms of whether a piece of evidence is relevant?
Well, the rule for relevant states that evidence goes to prove a fact and make it more probable or less probable. So in this particular case, DiBiase filed a motion in limine to have this particular evidence moved into evidence for the purpose of proving that he didn't hit her car. Now, that photograph does not make it more probable that he did not hit her. It actually makes it less probable. But the fact that plaintiff had objected to that and had asked the court to exclude the evidence, it should have been excluded. It's very similar to, I believe it's Habert v. Liberty Mutual or Liberty Mutual v. Habert, where in that case the evidence was excluded, and it was only admitted on impeachment when the expert stated he was relying on a representation that the accident was a side swipe, when in fact the photograph showed that it was the car was broadsided. And at that point, the photograph was admitted into evidence for the purpose of impeachment. And that was the point during the trial when it became relevant to that case. And it's a similar situation here. The photographs were not relevant until DiBiase said, "I didn't hit her car." Well, the defense is not going to use that information to support his statement. They couldn't, because it showed that there was damage, and there's no evidence to prove that the damage existed beforehand. That should have been plaintiff's opportunity to use that photograph for the simple purpose of impeaching him, which obviously plaintiff did not want to do because we tried to exclude the evidence. I know that there are several cases where the photographs are found to be relevant, and I realize that Davis does not say that photographs are per se inadmissible. This case, as I stated, is unlike those, though. It has no relevant purpose. Without no relevant purpose, there's no probative value. And without probative value, the prejudice of the photograph is egregious.
Explain that to me. What is it exactly about these photographs that you feel hurt your client's position?
Well, essentially, the photographs are a close-up taken of her vehicle.
Right.
The ones that were used at trial, anyway. And it's very difficult to see with the light reflections and the lights on the car on. There's sawdust all over the front, and it's very difficult to see that there is a dent there. You can see it, and if the jury looked at it closely, they would see it. It was testified to, it was pointed out, it was circled during testimony. But it's difficult to see the scratches on the windshield. And it's impossible to see the damage that was on the inside of the car that happened, presumably, when he hit the vehicle and the inside got jostled.
I don't think you're answering my question.
Okay.
My question is, what is it about these photographs that you say was prejudicial to your client? What did the photographs show that made your client's case worse?
Well, basically, the photographs, because it's so difficult to see the damage, it would presumably mean that the jury would look at it and say, wow, there's no damage here, and our client had very serious injuries.
You're saying that the photographs made it look like your client's car was not severely impacted.
Exactly.
And therefore, it would lead the jury to the conclusion that your client didn't suffer any injuries.
Exactly.
Okay.
And there was also, while there were some damages that were not disputed, there was some very disputed testimony over whether her injuries, whether she had prior injuries, whether they were exacerbated by the accident. There were some credibility issues that arise during any trial. But
well, tell me this. The photographs that were used during the trial over your objection, how were they used? Did anybody say, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, look at these photographs? All there are a bunch of dust, sawdust, and nothing, and therefore this person didn't get injured. Was that an argument that was made?
Not in those exact words, but yes. It was an implied argument, almost exactly what you stated.
All right, how does it get implied if it's not done exactly?
There are three references during opening and closing arguments to sawdust. The implication is, look at all the sawdust on the car. Okay, debris hit the car, but it was just sawdust. It wasn't anything. Later on during the opening and closing arguments, there was also argument about her injuries and basically saying that she was not injured. Either she was not injured during the accident or her injuries were not severe. Now, the two were never connected, and it made it very difficult to object because there was no particular place and time that we could object, or trial counsel could object. But That was the implied argument.
But a limiting instruction was given.
A limiting instruction was given.
And do you challenge the wording of that instruction in any way? Is it sufficient under Davis?
I believe that the instruction was sufficient. It was the standard curative instruction that is given. The problem and the reason why the curative instruction was not enough in this particular case is because the photos weren't relevant. They had no probative value. There was no other purpose that the jury could consider the photographs for except to look at it and say, wow, there's no damage here, and I guess she must be lying. There must be no injury, too.
If there had been a traffic cam movie of this accident, would that be inadmissible as well for the same reasons?
That I am not sure about. There is a case law that where there's a bus camera showing the inside of a bus, and they did say that that was admissible because it showed the events as they were occurring. So that may be admissible, but I'm not 100%, and I think that may be a question for another day. If Your Honors wouldn't mind, I'm well into my rebuttal time, so I would like to stop
Very
now.
Well.
Okay? Thank you.
May it please the Court. Good afternoon, Justice Holland, Justice Berger, and Justice Ridgely. I'm Sherry Fallon, and I represent the defendant, Louis DiBiase. Unlike the Davis case and all that came after it, I would refer to this case, Your Honor, as a no-impact case as opposed to a low-impact case. In this instance, in this particular case, there was a material issue of fact as to whether there was any contact whatsoever between my client's vehicle or any contents of his vehicle and the plaintiff's vehicle. And for that reason, as we've stated in our briefs, the trial court's decision to admit the photographs into evidence was correct as a matter of law, and the plaintiff suffered no egregious prejudice by the admission of the photographs.
Could you explain to me, admittedly, the black and white copies that we've got are pretty lousy, but could you tell me what is it about these photographs that are probative on the question of whether there was impact or not?
Well, you have to look at the plaintiff's testimony, Your Honor, and I put that in the brief, and it's quoted at pages of the appellant's appendix at A226 through 227, and I won't read word for word what's in pages 6 to 7 of our statement of facts, but just to give the court a flavor, it was the plaintiff's burden of proof to show that there was an impact, and that impact or accident from whatever it was, whether it was DiBiase's vehicle or contents, was as a result of his negligence. And as a result of that accident and the negligence, the alleged negligence of DiBiase and or Scully, the plaintiff suffered injuries. The plaintiff could not testify to that. She could not testify that there was any impact. She was asked, do you know what part of Mr. DiBiase's vehicle struck your vehicle? She said, no, I don't. Did you see the impact between your vehicle and Mr. DiBiase's vehicle? And her answer was, no, I did not. And I showed her one of the photographs and said that this is a photograph that was taken right at the accident scene. She affirmed that. And I said, where in this photograph, if you can show us, was your vehicle struck? And she says, I can only assume because I didn't see. And she went on to talk about the damages estimate. Her only proof at trial that there was any presumed contact between her vehicle and Mr. DiBiase's vehicle and or contents of his vehicle was that an estimate had been prepared,
okay,
which listed certain damages.
I understand that the plaintiff was apparently looking down or something like that at the moment that all this happened, and therefore was not in a position to give any testimony as to which car hit her or how or where or whatever. Okay, fine. I still get back to what do these photographs do to help prove your contention that there was no contact?
Well, she listed a number of items from the damage estimate that she says were allegedly contacted or affected in the accident. And I went through each of those things that she said. Show me where the bumper was damaged. Show me where you say the windshield was damaged. This was her vehicle, and while she may not have been looking at the time, when she looked up, if she was startled by the events going on, she would have seen some evidence of damages to her vehicle at some point. And the damages estimate itself included damages that were not as a result of the accident. She admitted on cross-examination that, for instance, the flat tire that she had sustained was a flat that she had incurred as she was driving away from the accident scene and ran over something. So that was not impact damage. So it brought into question, the photographs brought into question her credibility as to this loose connection that she was making that, look, I didn't see it, I couldn't tell you what hit me, I don't know what hit me, but look, I have a damages estimate here and it says all these different things were repaired, but, you know, take out the flat tire because that wasn't impact damage, it was something I ran over.
Okay, let me back up a little. It may be that I'm confused here, but am I correct that the part of her car that allegedly was impacted was the back of her car?
Your Honor, she claimed it was the front. The front bumper, somewhere on the front grill, one of fog lights or accessory lights on the front end of her vehicle.
Okay, so she claims that there was impact on the front of her vehicle, and you put in, or you want the court to rule that you can put in pictures that show the front of her vehicle and arguably tend to prove that no, there was no damage.
Correct.
Okay.
And but that yet, there was no impact.
No damage related.
But, and then this photograph, even though it was hard to see, show a dent in the bumper?
It was not apparent. If it was apparent to the plaintiff, she was the only one that it was apparent to. My client was also shown these photographs during the course of his testimony. And, you know, although he did not make a point of going out to her vehicle and inspecting it afterwards, he could not affirm that there was any...
Was the bumper ever repaired, or was the bumper on the repair estimate?
It was on the repair estimate. Replacement parts for the bumper, not the bumper in its entirety, parts of the bumper. And a light assembly and some windshield.
So your client's position is they were all pre-existing damages to the bumper?
My client's position is that we don't know one way or the other because it was the plaintiff's burden to prove the causal link between these damages on the estimate, that they were approximately caused by the accident. And she didn't do that because she was unable to even show us, other than one place that she circled at trial on the bumper, she was unable to show us by reference to these photographs or her own recollection what was caused by the accident. And she admitted that at least one item of damage, the flat tire, was not an impact-related form of damage. And one of the photographs even shows her directly sitting at the steering wheel in the driver's seat behind the windshield, and that was the photograph. It's at B5. In the defendant's exhibits, and I had hoped that the court would have the color copies. It was my understanding that the hard copies delivered had the color copies, but in any event, photograph at B5 in the appellee's appendix, Mr. DiBiase's appendix, shows the plaintiff actually sitting behind the wheel of her vehicle, and there doesn't appear to be any impediment or any kind of debris or residue or dust on the windshield that prevents anyone from seeing the plaintiff behind the wheel in that photograph. So that negated the fact that she's trying to allege that damages to the windshield were caused by the accident, and she couldn't testify from her own recollection, even without regard to the photographs, as to where the damages were. My client, you have to understand at trial, my client was adamant that his pickup truck, didn't make any contact whatsoever with the with the Saxton vehicle, and one of the photographs at B4 basically shows the resting points of the vehicle. The vehicle operated by my client is in the foreground and shows the construction materials in the back or the bed of his pickup truck. And the plaintiff's vehicle is not too far behind, but they're definitely not contacting one another and not in such close proximity that you could infer that, you know, they bounced off of one another or whatever.
Was the evidence of the property damage and the payment of that introduced for any other purpose other than showing damage to the vehicle?
That was the only way. No, it was not, Your Honor. I mean, that was its only purpose because the plaintiff could not testify through witnesses or from her own recollection as to what impact damages were on her vehicle. That was her only means of suggesting to the jury that, yes, there was an impact because these areas of damage on my vehicle are listed on this repair estimate.
So the photographs were introduced to essentially
rebut that testimony.
Specific evidence?
Yes, Your Honor, and to impeach the plaintiff's credibility because she was, I started to give you a flavor for her testimony. She was just so vague as to whether there was one impact or two impacts. And when we were drafting these briefs on appeal and I was reading the Enrique cases and even another one of Judge Slight's cases, Sloan versus Clemens, this seemed to be even a better fit for the rulings in those cases than those cases themselves. In Enrique, of course, this honorable court allowed photographs to be admitted into evidence to show that it was more probable than not that the plaintiff's knees had struck the dashboard. Well, we're dealing with a situation here where the photographs are introduced to show whether it's more probable than not that there was any impact between the plaintiff's vehicle and my client's vehicle or any materials from my client's vehicle. And Judge Slights pointed out in a footnote in the Sloan case that there are some instances where there is perhaps a question about whether or not there's multiple impacts or whether when the plaintiff testifies as to the mechanism of injury, what happened to them in the vehicle, where photographs are admissible under the other purpose exception from the Davis rule to show whether or not it's more probable than not that the accident occurred in the way the plaintiff described. For instance, Judge Slight says, if a plaintiff was to describe a violent thrashing of her body about the compartment of the vehicle on impact, or multiple impacts when other evidence suggested only one, then evidence otherwise inadmissible under Davis may be admitted in the exercise of the trial court's discretion to attack the credibility of the plaintiff's testimony. And then it goes on to say, of course, such admission would be accompanied by the appropriate limiting instruction. And in this case, there were two limiting instructions. One given after Mr. Landon admitted the photographs on his cross-examination of my client, Mr. DiBiase, in his case in chief. And then the other limiting instruction was given with the general jury instructions at the end of the case. So the requirements were satisfied. And we would respectfully submit that the photographs were properly admitted for an other purpose or an exception to Davis. No references were made in opening statement nor in summation to ask the jury to correlate a relationship between what was in the photographs that were introduced and minimal injury to plaintiff. In fact, in this case, the plaintiff had such credibility issues with regard to her medical records and her own pre-existing history that that's very likely a reason that the jury found as it did. And the defendant, DiBiase, had offered in the prayer conference to split the decision of liability and damages, give the jury two separate interrogatories to answer. And it was at the plaintiff's insistence that the jury got an all-encompassing special verdict form that simply asked, do you find that defendant such and such was negligent in a manner approximately causing the plaintiff's injuries? So the jury verdict form didn't separate out the liability and the proximate cause. And there were so many issues of credibility with regard to the damages part of the case, the fact that she had low back pain and it was radiating into her leg and she had been given 15 Percocets the very day before this accident occurred. That was a significant finding.
Did you say 15?
15 Percocets the very day before the accident occurred. And these were being prescribed by Dr. John Kahagias, who was a witness at trial. It happens to be her brother-in-law and treating physician. And they had a relationship going in which if she had pain, she would go to his home and get pain medication injections and or narcotic prescriptions that he never recorded in her chart. So there was a host of credibility issues, not just with the plaintiff, but with the plaintiff's treating physician, her brother-in-law, and issues that the jury could have found, you know, swayed them in favor of, even if they found that there was an impact, even if they, you know, looked at the photographs and say, yes, the photographs show there was an impact, or no, the photographs don't show. I mean, that became irrelevant if the jury was influenced by the damages testimony in the case and the credibility issues of the plaintiff and her witnesses on her alleged damages. And we can't know that because of the way the jury verdict was given in this case. So going back, Judge Sleitz and Judge Herlihy felt that the other purpose exception was satisfied and that the photographs were admissible. Judge Herlihy allowed the three photographs that came into evidence to be admitted and no other photographs were offered into evidence. The judge had reserved decision on whether anything beyond the three photographs that he ruled upon in the motion in limine would be admissible.
Well, it was represented earlier that the judge ruled inadmissible the better quality photographs. Is that incorrect?
He reserved decision on those, Your Honor. He denied. He said they were subject to further ruling of the court. And so in order to not stray or possibly risk the introducing a photograph that he would not find had a proper foundation or whatever, we stuck with the three photographs because they were taken contemporaneously with the accident, you know, after the accident occurred at the accident scene. The other photographs were taken after the fact. Many of them were just close-up pictures of other parties' vehicles and whatnot, and may not have been particularly helpful or relevant to the issue at hand, which is whether or not there was any impact whatsoever.
Now, why was it necessary for Judge Sleitz to make an additional ruling?
I think it was just raised for the purposes of I'm not quite sure how that came up, but I know that plaintiff raised it again, Your Honor, when Judge Sleitz took over the case as trial judge. Judge Herlihy had the case, and it may have been just out of an abundance of precaution to make sure that the record indicated that the plaintiff was still taking the position that no photograph should be admitted into evidence.
But in your view, did Judge Sleitz change Judge Herlihy's ruling in any way?
No. With all respect to the court, it doesn't appear that they, it appears that they were on the same page. They may have said it in different ways, but their view of it was that this didn't violate Davis because the photographs were not being introduced for an impermissible purpose. They were being introduced for another purpose. And then both judges accepted the fact that there was a material issue of fact and dispute as to whether there was any impact whatsoever. The other, just a few quick points. In the reply brief, the plaintiff raises the issue of another grounds for setting aside the trial court's ruling on the basis that these photographs are distorted. That's an argument that was not raised anywhere but in the reply brief, and I, based on my colleague's comments in her argument, it doesn't appear that they are pursuing that distortion argument. Now what I'm hearing is that the photographs clearly show a dent in the bumper, so I'm a bit confused as to what position they're taking with regard to that. And in there, also in the comments, there was a testimony offered that State Farm paid certain damages and whatever. Just for the court's information, State Farm is the insurer for Mr. DiBiase. There was no evidence introduced naturally in front of the jury concerning any liability insurance or that State Farm paid any such damages. When the damages estimate of the vehicle damages to Ms. Saxton's vehicle was introduced, I believe, if my recollection serves me correct, and it's in the record in the appendix, that Mr. Landon referred to it as an estimate prepared by one of your representatives, meaning one of Mr. DiBiase's representatives. He didn't say State Farm, he didn't say an insurer, and he didn't say that those expenses were paid. It was just an estimate prepared by someone on behalf of Mr. DiBiase. And also there's some attachments to the briefs regarding bumper strengths from the National Highway Transportation Administration. And again, those are outside of the record. Those were never introduced at any level in the trial proceedings. I see that my time is up. I want to thank the court for this opportunity.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I have a few more points that I wanted to discuss. First of all, the pictures are far from clear. What they are distorted, they are taken at night, there are light marks in the photographs, as I've stated, but they do show that there is a dent if you look closely.
And that dent was part of the damage, property damage estimate, at least that part of it?
Yes, it was. And basically what happens here is defense shows the jury inconclusive pictures as to whether or not there was an accident. And then they dispute medical injuries. And that created this prejudice where the jury now is comparing these photographs, which they can see and not really sure what is going on in those pictures. They can see hopefully they see that there is a dent. But now we have this entire argument about medical injuries.
Why do you put all of the concern on the photos? Why wouldn't it be of equal concern to the jury that your client was in pain the day before the accident?
Well, Your Honor, there are some undisputed damages. First of all, there's a broken tooth, which was not disputed. There was no expert testimony about that from the other side. There was muscle spasm noted in the ER records, which was not disputed by their expert.
Relative contradicted the broken tooth evidence.
I'm sorry?
Did not a relative contradict the broken tooth evidence?
No. Actually, what she said was a few months before the trial, which was approximately 2 years after the accident, she had a broken tooth from this fluoride problem in Greece. And then she further stated Mrs. Saxton never told her anything about a tooth problem after the accident. So she never connected the two to say that she had this tooth problem and that was not related to the accident. And that is in the record. Actually at A183. We know that this is highly prejudicial because there's actually a case, Hovis v. Hughes, where it's presented to the jury one time with photographs of very little damage to a vehicle, and they get a $1,000 verdict. It's overturned because of Davis v. Ma, and it goes back, and they get an $80,000 verdict on the same, presumably the same facts. As to the damage, she does state during her testimony that the front bumper, the grill, the windshield, and the fog light underneath were damaged in the accident. When pressed to point them out in the photograph, she couldn't find them because the photograph's distorted. Actually, it's a very close-up picture, so you can't see the fog light or some of the damage. As for the windshield, if you look in those other pictures I pointed out before, you can see that their nicks and scratches are circled in those photographs. I'll close with this. This case is almost the exact opposite of Enrique, because in that case, the plaintiff was trying to prove that her knees hit the dashboard. In this case, it would be like the defense trying to say, yeah, there's a dent in the dashboard, but the plaintiff's knees didn't hit that.
So it's the exact opposite, and it's exactly what we have here.
Thank you. Thank you both. The court will take this matter under advisement. We'll also take a brief recess.